This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharitz Abdullah and you are listening to The Breakfast Grill. Malaysia is targeting to provide 1 million affordable homes by 2028 through its National Housing Policy 2.0. However, household debt remains high at 83% in 2018, a slight improvement compared to a year before, but with residential housing loans accounting for about 53.2% of that total debt. While the property market is expected to remain soft, Malaysia's GDP is still on course with its modest growth of 4.4% in April. Bank Negara Malaysia has recently cut 25 basis points in its overnight policy rate, which would result in perhaps lower loan installments to help with the property consumption. But the question is, will it spur more home ownership? And with our high household debt, should we be encouraging home ownership? So joining me this morning to speak about his position on the Malaysia's property sector, as well as his policy ideas published in 2018, is Dr. Camilo Filito, the Senior Fellow of Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, or better known as IDEAS. Dr. Filito, thank you for joining us on The Breakfast Grill.
Thanks to you. Good morning.
Good morning. So let's begin with the subject of your business cycle. In your publications, you speak of how recession is inevitable as the idea that business cycles are unavoidable by developing the doctrine of the natural cycle. What is the correlation between government's attempt to address the issue of affordable homes and the global economic situation?
There is a connection in the sense that our economists actually prestigious economists like Vernon Smith explained, there is a correlation in general between housing cycle and economic cycles. In the period after World War II in the United States, 12 economic crises were preceded by housing crisis. So there is a strong nexus, and therefore I believe that the importance of monitoring the cycle in the property market is crucial to tackle the risk of a more general global recession.
But if we look at some of the recent trends in the property sector, it has shown a general trend of growth, and even during a recession period. Could you explain the rationale as to why is it that you think the property bubble will burst, you know, during this possible recession cycle?
Is actually quite the different perspective, in the sense that in certain cases the property market is the industry leading to the crisis. In other situations, might get involved in a recession that started somewhere else. So we have to consider the issue as having different facets.
Okay.
So we cannot have a unique explanation for each cycle.
Okay.
So in this case, in example, for the case of the property market in Malaysia, I would say that there is a difference between what happened in the Western world 10 years ago and the consequences in the property market here, because the recession started in 2007, 2008 in the United States, in Europe, was a typical Western phenomenon, which was not linked with something happening here. And we might even think that the boom that indeed started in the property market in Malaysia was a reaction to that crisis, seeking for a refuge for investment and capital in a moment in which the global economy was getting wrong.
So the boom that you're speaking about is between that period of 2012 to around 2014.
Well, it started earlier. Actually, we have an expansion that started slowly around after the Asian crisis, 1997, 1998. Mm-hmm. Then the boom became more accelerated after 2008. And then the moment of 2012, 2013 is the peak of the boom. So we have to look at those years not as the most important years, but as the ones in which the tide started to turn. actually.
Could you help me clarify? Are we speaking that the property sector, with the boom that we're facing and the potential burst, are we saying that the property sector could contribute or could lead towards a recession? Or are we saying that the recession will happen anyways as a result of global trend and will affect the property sector? So which is it?
No, in this case, in the specific case of the present-day Malaysian property market sector, I see at least a cooling down of the industry. Okay, then you can call it recession, you can call it burst. We can use different words to name the same phenomenon, but this will be a cooling down that will affect the general economic trend of Malaysia. Of course, we have to consider that Malaysia is still a country doing well, economically speaking, and I believe that the consequences of a recession in the property market, which has already started, will not necessarily be heavy. Will depends also how the issue will be tackled from policy perspective.
So if you look at the value property overhang in Malaysia, we're looking about a value of around 25 billion mm-hmm. ringgit. And this is marginal if we compare it to the overall GDP of Malaysia, which is over 1 trillion ringgit, 1.2 to 1.3. Could an extreme downturn in the property sector, you know, actually lead to a recession given this portion that it holds in the GDP?
I believe that it will have an impact, definitely, because we also have to consider all the other industries that are related to the property market, like the construction sectors, the materials, the job market. So there might be a domino effect, okay? The consequences are difficult to determine from a quantitative perspective, but surely it will affect the general economic condition, even if I believe that the fundamentals of Malaysian economy are still strong enough to handle the situation. But definitely there will be an impact.
Do you have a figure in mind? How much is this industry worth in total?
Well, I don't have that figures, but I think that in order to understand the consequences, is not enough to have in mind the number, but it will very much depend also on the policies that will be implemented to address the issue.
Okay.
So it is difficult to be determined in advance. There will be an impact. We have to be the point. One of the points of my paper is that we have to be ready for that. Okay, so start to think about that, not think about only the issue of affordability.
So it's just highlighting the problems and start thinking about it.
Start thinking, because the tide has already turned. So the market is already cooling down. Prices are not growing that fast anymore. The number of unsold properties is high. So we need to think about what's going on and probably shift our discussion from affordability only to a more general discussion on the property market, also from a policy perspective.
You did mention in your policy ideas the term readjustment process. Now, you highlighted that the growing mismatch between demand and supply, which occurred between that 2012 and 2014. And today, the market is undergoing, as you mentioned, a readjustment process. What constitutes a readjustment process in our local context?
Readjustment process is, let's say, a technical word to address, to avoid to use the word crisis or downturn in an industry. And it is a necessary process when something wrong happens in a market because of overexcited profit expectations. This is a typical dynamic in every boom. It is necessary for that overexcitement to cool down. And the shape that this cooling down takes is to clear out economic initiative, to have failures, to have readjustment, resizing, and etc.
What sort of failures are we talking about? Is it a drop in property prices?
Might be. And indeed, while up to a couple of years ago, the prices were stably growing at an average of 5% a year, nowadays, we are around 1.1%. So this is already a sign.
It's a slowdown of growth rather than a contraction.
Yes. So it takes time. Yeah, the deflation process is a necessary process, but it happens over time and can have different sizes. But I'm also talking about the growing number of unsold properties, also a symptom. And we can have even some developers cracking down, like it happened in Europe 10 years ago or in the United States. Or we can have developers changing strategy, like developers that become landlord, as they can't sell anymore. Mm. So they decide, in order to recover the investment, at least to rent out directly the units. So this might be a direction.
So we'll get back into the subject of renting per se and what are the gaps. In the meantime, now joining us on the Breakfast Grill this morning is Dr. Carmelo Felito, Senior Fellow of Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs of Veteranunens Ideas. We'll have more discussion on his policy ideas, in particular the involvement of government in the property sector as well as consumer trends. So stay tuned on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
You've tuned into BFM 89.9. On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Dr. Carmelo Felito, Senior Fellow of Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known as IDEAS. We ended on that note of government's involvement in the development of affordable homes. Now, does the government have any developmental role in providing affordable homes?
Well, I would say no, and not because I'm ideologically against the government involvement in the industry, but because I'm skeptical on the possibilities of success of a central plan economy. And I make you a very simple example. I try to explain. We have two type of knowledge. Okay, I, following an economist called Friedrich Hayek, I distinguish between what we call technical knowledge, how to do things, and entrepreneurial knowledge, which is the idea of doing certain things with certain feature in a certain moment, in a certain place. So the knowledge of the conditions of time and place, basically. Mm. While the government can succeed in possessing technical knowledge, how to do things, I believe that government cannot handle, cannot get in possession of entrepreneurial knowledge. Because entrepreneurial knowledge, by nature, is an evolving knowledge, an ever-changing knowledge that arises in the market. So only if you are playing every day in the market, you can have access to that kind of information that is necessary to implement an entrepreneurial plan. And the government, by definition, is playing outside of the market. So every kind of central plan will suffer of strong limitations on the knowledge of the market conditions.
Yeah, so you have that position, right? Only private entrepreneurs can elaborate sound plans in line with what real market actually needs. But if we look at the issue of the supply and demand mismatch, one of the root causes was the misinterpretation of demand by the property developers, hence the glut that we see today. So we see developers are driven by profit, whereas government is primarily driven by social mandate. Can we entrust entrepreneurs or developers with this responsibility?
Yes, but we have to ask ourselves how that historical gap was created. Is the market for affordable housing naturally unprofitable for private developers, or is made artificially unprofitable because of conditions created by regulations, in example? So I believe, first of all, that private developers didn't step into that segment because it was highly engaged by government agencies. So somehow government initiatives crowded out private initiatives.
What initiative are we speaking about here? Are we speaking about affordable homes, for example,
yes,
Prima,
yes,
development and so forth?
Precisely, precisely. So imagine now that the developers realized that there are no more profit opportunities in the high-end segment, they might restructure their investment, moving into the affordable housing market, where probably the profit is lower but more certain, more safe in the present conditions. But with the involvement, the direct involvement of the government, of course, they are not going to do so. And this is one issue. The other is the involvement through regulations. If, in example, you are forced to build affordable houses with a certain size or in certain locations, then this can create a problem of profitability, while being less strict on minimum requirements can get the private developers in.
On that subject, I mean, you advocate discipline in consumer spending, and one way to implement it is through the implementation of GST.
Yes.
And you recommended that only 10% tax holiday for developers that who are undertaking the affordable home projects. So
I think that this is a less distortive way to attract private investors into a market that eventually is politically considered as important for social reasons. So rather than getting the government directly involved, try to attract private with an incentive schemes, and the best incentive schemes is tax holidays or tax reductions or something on that line. In this case, you also achieve the target of getting less expenses for the government.
But there seems to be a bit of a disproportion, the GST and a tax holiday on the property sector. I mean, again, we're talking about the size of the property sector. Now, this recommendation, isn't this a recommendation to tax the public rather than the property developers instead?
Listen, I said that I'm in favor of indirect taxation as a replacement of income tax. Mm. So, of course, from my perspective, I would never be an advocate for more taxes.
Of course.
But
yes,
eventually as a shift. So looking at the global aim that we want to achieve, which is on one side to incentivize a more saving-oriented mentality, so a shift from income to consumption tax goes in that direction, while the fiscal incentives for developers go in the direction to try to push on the development of affordable houses. So
REDA recently announced that the supply of homes below 500,000 is at 65%, which is up by 52%. This announcement is still off the mark. We are speaking about 300,000. Should the government step in under the circumstances?
Honestly, I have strong doubts on using the median income multiplier as a signal for a policy, because it's a too synthetic indicator that doesn't take into account different locations, different situations. In the end, who is the median earner? Doesn't exist. It's just a number made out of many numbers.
Of course.
Consider that, in example, a low ratio between median housing price and median income is not necessarily a good indicator. Might be the indicator that nobody wants to live in a certain place, and that's why the prices are low. So we have to be more conscious about the complexity of the issues, and that affordability needs to be tackled from three points of view, not only price or income, but also location and size. So I believe that, in example, a good way to tackle the issue would be to remove the minimum requirements in terms of size, in example. This would allow, this is a complex discussion actually, but if you, in example, put a very high minimum requirement for size, in order to keep the price low, you will be forced to build those units far away from transportations, from far away from facilities, and most importantly, far away from where good job opportunities are.
Okay.
While if you instead remove those limitations, you might create the situation in which someone might accept the idea to live in a smaller unit if it is closer to good job opportunities. This would be good for him in terms of improving social mobility, and would be better for the general economic performances of the country. So we have to be very careful on how we address the issue of affordability, and not to consider it from a general complex perspective.
Bank Negara has brought down the interest rate, and the Ministry of Finance has also stepped in to instruct banks to try and be a bit more flexible in approving mortgage applications. What do you make of this?
Honestly, I think that is not doing any good to the economic system. The impact of reducing interest rates, I think, will be very limited. But what the Minister of Finance is saying goes exactly in the opposite direction of what I mentioned before. If certain houses are unsold, it means that the entrepreneurs provided something that is not in demand of the market, in the market. So if you are going to create more easy credit, we are telling somehow to the entrepreneurs that the mistake that they did is less heavy than what actually is. Considering, moreover, the difficult situation of the household debt in Malaysia, which is among the highest in the world. So we do really want to send out this kind of signal that houses, expensive houses, can be bought, that we can have credit, and therefore we do a double mistake. On one side, we create more debt to the households. On the other side, we are not telling the entrepreneurs, we are not helping the entrepreneurs to learn from their mistakes.
Okay, so we have an issue of trying to solve the household debt because it ensures financial stability of the country in general. So another alternative to owning a house, I think, that you speak about is the option of renting. And several other institutes as well speak of this. Kazana Research Institute, for example, recognizes housing as a basic need and a base for asset accumulation. Now, your position is that owning a house is not a fundamental human right. Now, there is also a traditional idea of home ownership is just to own for something that you already have to pay anyways. So help us make sense. How does renting help solve the affordable home crisis? Yeah.
So I believe that probably owning a house is not a fundamental human right. So I would move from the concept of housing to the concept of shelter. Then shelter, yes, it is a fundamental human right.
Okay.
So we expand the scope of our discussion.
Sure.
Then I believe we have to consider, first of all, a cultural change. I believe that the current generation of the people in the 30s is living in a moment of cultural change. Rental can become the more viable solution in order to have shelter. And in this segment, I see also a potential for a less heavy, a lighter intervention for the government. So instead of having the government building affordable housing, I would prefer schemes like the ones suggested by Jane Jacobs of supporting rental. Then we can explore different kind of solutions. In my latest paper, I also develop a very specific plan for that. But in general, the idea is to have a government with less financial disbursement, targeting the rent rather than the ownership. And this becomes also more flexible because in the moment in which a person can step up in terms of personal position, then the government can step back from the subsidy that they give.
Okay. I think one last question. All the recommendations that you have listed in your policy idea, none at the moment has been taken by the government.
The one of reducing the direct involvement of government in building through government agencies, this one, I think, is the one that the government is taking more seriously. They are realizing that there is an issue in direct development. They see that there are problems with some of the agencies, and I think they are keen to listen proposals in this direction.
Okay. Dr. Carmelo, all the best to you, and thank you so much for speaking to us today on The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you very much.
So that was Dr. Carmelo Frelito, Senior Fellow of the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known as IDEAS. You've been listening to The Breakfast Grill, and I'm Sharitz Abdullah for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. Now with faster speeds every day. Baru la bes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.